This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
Ladies and gentlemen, a wrestling contest for the world's heavyweight championship. Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher!
And welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here, keeping us on track. And we're your weekly source for performance information. Yes, get to us, crushperformance.com. All of our blogs, podcasts, hookups, information are there. You can also send us any emails with questions, comments, or smart remarks. If you're on Twitter, follow us at Jeff Crush. And on Facebook, we've got this great little group called The Talent Grid. We're building a great little community there. Everybody's just sharing information about, hey, performance. And it's not always related to sport. But most of it certainly is. So join up there if you're on Facebook. Today, a really big show. I'm looking forward to today's show. We're going to have a look at where we're at in the war on drugs in sports. We're going to speak with Olivier Nigley, the Director General of WADA, to see what has happened since the fiasco leading up to the Rio Olympics and the aftermath that brought WADA under fire. During the Olympics, there was a lot of testing that didn't happen. There were problems with the labs, and people started questioning whether WADA was really able to do what they're supposed to do, which is test for drugs and fight for fair play. Since the Olympics, WADA's hosted a very important think tank meeting, and we'll discuss with Olivier and see where the world is at in terms of supporting sport in the world of anti-doping and WADA, the governing body. We'll also take a look. The 2017 prohibited list is out. Who is responsible at the end of the day for what goes into the bodies of the athletes? The athlete themselves, most certainly. They are accountable at the end of the day, but also the performance team and entourage around them has to do a job of making sure that the athlete's aware of what's going on. All too often, athletes are passive, trusting the people around them to let them know what is on the banned list. And there has been some changes for 2017. So we're going to talk to Mr. Nigley about that as well as the list has come out. And we'll look at some of the recent positive tests that have come around because of, you know, lack of knowledge of what was actually on the test. And Sharapova is a classic example. And we're also going to ask about supplements. What is WADA's stance on sports supplements? It's predicted that the sports supplement industry will generate $55 billion in 2020. And if you look at the dietary supplement industry, this is insanity. It's projected to reach a staggering $278 billion in revenue by the year 2024. It is growing leaps and bounds every single year as we're looking for solutions to health, wellness, and performance. And it's certainly a dangerous place to be, no question. We always caution our athletes if they're going to be using supplements. We'll ask Mr. Nigley about WADA's stance on supplements, but I have to tell you to proceed with caution. Back in 2000-2001, the IOC actually did a study looking at, hey, what's going on in the supplement world? We're having our great ambassadors and some of our high-end athletes testing positive, saying and pleading that they have never taken a banned substance. So the International Olympic Committee went out in 2000-2001, and they went around the world to 13 different countries. They went to 215 different stores and providers and picked out 634 different supplements just off the shelf. It could have been the supplement shop down your street or in your neighborhood. We don't know. There's 215 suppliers that they went to. And they tested every single one of these supplements. Here's what they found. Almost 15% of the supplements they tested, from multivitamins to proteins to sport drinks, had substances that weren't on the label that would cause a positive drug test. This is back in 2000-2001. Some of the more recent data and recent studies have shown that that number's actually increased, as some of these companies actually intentionally put substances into their products so they actually work. The consumer gets an adaptation and a result from the product. scary stuff, not only from the standpoint of sport performance, but health. We've seen young athletes and some young a girl died 2 years ago taking a supplement that was tainted with an anabolic steroid. It had contraindications with the medication she was taking, and she passed away. It is a travesty, and it's uncontrollable. So proceed with caution if you're using supplements. For our athletes, I get them to send me a picture of every single supplement they use, and I vet it out. We'll find out what WADA stance is on supplements after the break. And then later in the show, we're going to take a look at injury prevention in sport and how yoga is not only having an impact on reducing injuries, but when it's done right, it can improve performance. We're going to talk with yoga master Dana Santez. She's actually a mind-body coach, works with a ton of professional athletes and professional teams. Her website is mobilitymaker.com to discuss how her program and yoga in general is becoming a major part of the sport performance world. And we're using it now with all our athletes, but it has to be done right. So stick around. Coming up after the break, we'll visit with WADA to find out where we're at in the war on drugs in sports. We'll look at their banned substance list for 2017 and find out their stance on sports supplements right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Each week, we look at the latest trends and research coming out of the performance world to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it takes to achieve human maximum performance. And athletes, now you can do just that as Crush Performance presents the Sport Matrix, the program for top performance in sport. For more information, go to crushperformance.com. We're here to help you think like an athlete.
Listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. We are your weekly source for performance information. And now we are going to take a look into the deep, dark world of drugs in sports. There is an upside. Coming off the Rio Olympics, WADA was under the gun. And after a think tank and a couple of grand meetings by the world anti-doping bodies, it has been decided that WADA deserves and needs more power in regulating the war on drugs in sports. We're joined now by Olivia Nigley, the Director General for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Mr. Nigley, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Well, it's been a very turbulent time. Last we spoke was the lead up to Rio, and of course, that was a real big turning point in hindsight with the situation with the Russian Athletic Federation. WADA comes under fire in August. The think tank happens in September, and it's turned out right now that WADA is getting a ton of support moving forward. A very turbulent time, but it looks like it's heading in the right direction.
Well, we hope so. I think, as you say, it's been a turbulent time since Rio. But I think, in the end, WADA simply did its job. I mean, I think everybody has to realize that we're here for that. We're here to protect the clean athletes. And we did what we had to do, and not everybody liked it. And it's not an easy topic. And Russia is a real big challenge, not just for us, but for the international community. But I think in the end, we get support, I think, because people see that what we're doing is our job, and we're doing the right thing, and we're being transparent in what we're doing.
It's such an important job as well in this day and age where technology is at a place we've never seen before. We know that the doping and the designer drugs are out there. It's a war. It's a war on drugs, to tell you the truth. And I think that, the way things are shaping up, people want to see clean sport. And I think, the response to what happened at the Olympics and to the Russian Federation, I think speaks volumes when you look at the public interest and the support you've now gotten in the aftermath.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's a war. It's complicated. It's not something that is easy always for the public to understand, because there's a lot of different actors. But in the end, as I was saying before, doing the right thing and doing it transparently, is what we're here for. Now, this is not a fight what I can do alone. I mean, it's a fight which requires everybody to be united. It's a team effort that needs to be done, and that includes sports, governments, WADA, all the national anti-doping agencies. We need to work all together to do that, because otherwise you always have loopholes and you have big hole in the system. So I think that's where we're heading. I hope that's where we're heading by bringing a little bit more unity into that, and for everybody to take its responsibilities. And sometimes taking responsibilities is a hard thing to do.
And, of course, you guys are in the situation where you have to make tough calls. And, as you mentioned, they're not always the popular call.
Well, that's for sure. And I mean, nobody, you know, we would prefer that things would be easy, and we would have preferred to have an easy solution for Russia, but we didn't have one, because what the independent report unveiled was of so great concern that our executive committee had no hesitation in recommending what it had to recommend, and then other had to act, and they did different things, you know, the Paralympic, the International Olympic Committee. In the end, you know, it's a matter of how you interpret things, how you do things. But what is important for me now is going forward. And what is important going forward is that we still have an issue with Russia that the international community needs to deal with, so that we're not facing the same situation in 2 years. And we need the Russians to play their part in that, to do the changes that are required within their system. And hopefully they'll do that sooner rather than later, so that we can move forward. And then we're going to keep doing our work. I mean, Russia is not the only country. I mean, it would be wrong to point fingers at just one country. There are other issues around the world, and that's why we're here, and we're going to keep doing that.
It's an ongoing battle. We're talking with the Director General of the World Anti-Doping Agency, Olivier Nigley. Do you think, Mr. Nigley, that Russia was maybe just an eye-opener? Maybe it's an opportunity to really turn things in the right direction. And, you know, looking at the conversations and the meetings that have happened since, that could very well be the case, a move in a positive direction here.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope so. I hope that out of these challenging times, there is good that comes out, and good meets a commitment from everybody to do it better, to put more resources into the system, to ensure that we can be more efficient. And again, that goes to both, you know, sports, governments. Everybody needs to play their part in that, and that we can all do that. So yes, I want to be optimistic, and I want to think that there's still quite a way to go. But I want to hope that at the end we'll have something better to protect the clean athletes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the shot is across the bow with what's happened in Russia. So, and we see that happening in the other parts of the world. Moving on, I think it's very interesting. You guys have a bunch of issues going on. There was a cyber hack recently by a group called Fancy Bear, and this was hitting the headlines here not too long ago. But they're trying to access, or they did access, information regarding some of the athletes in regards to the therapeutic use exemptions. An interesting scenario that you wouldn't think would be something you have to deal with, but I guess in this day and age, this is the reality of it all.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly a reality, and I think just in the middle of your election campaign, or the election campaign in the U.S., I mean, it's obviously something that everybody's got to deal with today. I mean, hacking and cyber hacking is part of today's world, and first of all, I'd like to remind always that this is a criminal act. I mean, this has been done by criminal people, and there is criminal investigation being ongoing, and maybe one day these people will come to justice. But this being said, for us, you know, it was, in one way, it was very embarrassing to have private data from athletes being released in the public, because these are data which are private in their nature, and they shouldn't be put like that in the public domain. But on the other end, there was nothing, we got nothing to hide. I mean, there was nothing in this system that was not known to the anti-doping community. There was no secrets that were revealed by this hacking. All that is well known to the community. It's just that it is not known to the public at large, because these are private information. But it was known to us. It was known to the International Federation. It was known to the athletes. It was known to those who had a need to know that. So, you know, there was no bomb in what was revealed by the Fancy Bear, but there was a lot of embarrassment caused to innocent athletes, which I find that very, very unfortunate.
Yeah, and that is unfortunate. And, you know, the talk about the therapeutic exemptions, that's an interesting conversation as well. And for our listeners and people who are supporting, you know, clean sport, there are circumstances where the World Anti-Doping Agency will recognize a medication for use that is accepted. And that's sort of what the therapeutic use exemption is all about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a legitimate right that everybody's got to have access to medical treatment. And when you're an elite athlete, you're still a human being, and you may still need from time to time for very valid medical reasons to get a treatment. And the system has been put into place just to allow for that to happen, with a lot of safeguards so that this could not be abused. But it's a right that every human being's got. And the way the Fancy Bear were trying to portray that was that it was completely abused by some athletes in the West in particular, compared to what was going on in other part of the world. This is untrue for the simple reason that the same systems applies to every athlete all around the world. So, you know, trying to create a bias using that as an example was just wrong. And I think the public saw that, but that was the angle that was given to it.
Yeah, they were trying to attack and, I guess, defame or put under the spotlight the American athletes, thinking that there's favoritism going on, which is absolutely not the case. Look, this is a global initiative, and there's support all around the world. I think everybody does want to see clean sport. And your work with Interpol over the years, WADA and Interpol have been working together to really tackle the global, the global issues. And I think this project Energia is a great example of this. Let's talk about this program a little bit. I'm not too familiar with it, but I like the sounds of the principle. And again, in the global battle, this is certainly a great project.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a long time relationship with Interpol, and we're doing different things with them. In particular, I mean, they are our main point of contact to reach out to law enforcement every time we have information who may be of interest to law enforcement. So that's our main, I would say, activities with them. But we just initiated this project, which is jointly funded by WADA, Interpol, and also a criminal institute in Lausanne University in Switzerland, and we're pooling resources together and the know-how of these people to look into whether there is ways of tracing back the origin of prohibited substances that are being distributed on the market. And to put it simple, is the goal of the project is to identify a number of those molecules you would find in products that you buy on the internet or anywhere, and you would be able to trace it back because you know that the specific composition of this molecule comes from that country or this molecule comes from that origin, which would give us and give law enforcement a very good mapping of who are actually the main producer of this prohibited substance so that we can then follow up and act on that. And so we look forward to the result of this project, which should probably give us very useful indication as to where we have to concentrate our efforts.
We're talking with Olivier Niglet, the Director General for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Well, I like this. Attacking it at the source seems like a logical approach to get, but I don't think it's as easy as it sounds. I mean, getting to the source. But this project does seem to have the potential to get us there, and that's an exciting, development.
Yeah, well, we hope so. I mean, it's not going to be easy, and that's why we're using good scientists to try to get to the bottom of it, and criminologists and people who are specialized in the field. And like any research project, you're never 100% sure of the outcome, but we think it's worth the investment, and hopefully we get good results.
Right. So, Mr. Niglet, last time we spoke prior to Rio, we left our conversation talking about the Think Tank series that was coming up. You had one in September, and it sounds like the outcomes of that Think Tank were spectacular. I mean, a real good move in the right direction, as 8 major points came out of that meeting. How did the Think Tank go, in your opinion? Did you guys achieve the goals that you were hoping to?
Yeah, I think, it was a very good meeting, and it was again very open and transparent, and we had excellent speakers who came to that meeting, and we're very grateful to them because they brought some fresh ideas and fresh vision around the table, which is what we need to brainstorm and to look at how things can be done better. So now different groups met over the past few months, not just our think tank, but there was also an Olympic summit organized by the International Olympic Committee. There was a meeting of the national anti-doping agencies. All these people came up with ideas, suggestions. So we're bringing all that together around our table in November, where we're going to have a foundation board meeting. The governments are also meeting prior to that, and they'll come up with their suggestions. And we're going to try from there to draw a roadmap going forward. Some of the suggestion can be implemented very quickly. Some other will require more work, more probably more groups, maybe more think tank and so on. But we're going to establish a process and a roadmap, and then, you know, work from there on how we can improve the system. And I'm very comfortable with the process that is going on at the moment. And the think tank, there was a lot of good ideas on the table, and we'll try to use that as best as we can.
Yeah, I really like some of the points that came out, Mr. Niggli. And one I wanted to ask you about, you know, sort of in light of what happened in Russia, point number three, the comprehensive whistleblower policy and program that provides greater assurances to those who come forward. I think that's a real important move. And I just wanted to know what the conversation was around that one, because obviously that's going to be a real big tool in the battle against drugs and sports here moving forward.
Yeah. Absolutely, and that's one that we were already preparing before that, and we are ready. We have a policy on the table for approval by our foundation board in November. Hopefully they like it and they will approve it, and then we'll have this policy in place, which includes both, you know, the legal framework that needs to go with whistleblowing, because you want to make sure that the role and responsibilities and the what you can do and what you cannot do are well defined. That's one aspect of it, and also goes with this whistleblower policy, the IT aspect of things. We just talk about hacking. Well, this is very important to make sure also you put into place a very secure IT system so that any of the information that is provided to you is secured, and those who are providing the information are confident that they're not putting themselves at risk by doing so. So all this is on the table for us, and hopefully we can adopt that already as early as November.
Yeah, that's great. We're talking with Olivier Niggli, the Director General for the World Anti-Doping Agency. It seems coming out of this meeting, based on what I've read and what I've followed and people I've talked to, the support for WADA is incredible. I mean, one of the statements was WADA must be given greater authority, regulatory, and sanctioning powers. And that was sort of comes from, I think, a general view from the national anti-doping organizations, which is exciting, the support.
Yes, support is needed and is great to hear, but support will have to transform into reality and making sure the right reforms and the right progress are put into place, and, you know, the funding that needs to be coming with those comes too. So yes, all this is going in the right direction, as you said at the beginning, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
Very exciting. One last thing, the 2017 prohibited list has been out. You can check it out at WADA's website. And there's a few changes. I think that this is a very important document. And if we look back to Sharapova, and even if we go back to some of the professional players who have tested positive over this last year through medications or substances that they didn't know were banned, a lot of this is the responsibility. Well, let's face it. It is the responsibility in the end of the athlete to understand this list and make sure they know what's going into their bodies.
Yeah, I mean, that's how the system is drafted, that the ultimate responsibility lies with the athlete. So they have the responsibility to inform themselves and to make sure they're comfortable with that. This being said, it is also a great responsibility of the entourage of the athletes to make sure that they inform the athletes rightly. And then Sharapova may not be the best example, but I mean, she was obviously let down by the people around her who should have known better. And, you know, we are trying to make sure that every international federation and going down to every national federation informs as best as they can their athletes. And you know, you can understand that the information doesn't go the same way all around the world. Some are more efficient than others. But it's very important that this information being spread. This being said, as you mentioned, ultimately it is for the athlete's responsibility. And if the athletes have any doubt about taking a product, they should go and talk to the doctors and make sure they get the proper advice on it.
Mr. Niggli, does the World Anti-Doping Agency ever foresee a time where they would offer support or options for athletes? If we look at the supplement world, for example, I always go back to this because this was a fascinating experiment to me, was the IOC's supplement study from 2000-2001, where they found about 15% of the, you know, over-the-counter, you know, just regular sports supplements were tainted with substances that would cause an athlete to be test positive. It's a dangerous world out there for an athlete, you know, when we talk about sports supplementation and all the things that are available.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure, and that's why, you know, the advice and the advice given also by most medical people is don't take supplements. I mean, most of the time you don't need them. But if you need them, then don't do it on your own. Don't buy stuff on on the internet or don't go on your own to a shop. Go and do that with your medical practitioner. There are things you can buy out of the pharma industry, which is different than the supplement industry, which are a lot more controlled than what you would normally find, especially if you buy it on the internet. So extreme caution is required. We still had cases where, unfortunately, even athletes had put a lot of caution, tested positive for having taken a supplement. But in those cases, the way the code has been drafted is that you could take that into account in the length of the sanction that the athlete would get. So there are this can be the sanction can be mitigated if you've taken all the precautions that are needed. But the first step is for the athletes to be very careful and certainly not buy anything on the internet. I mean, this is way far too dangerous for any athletes to do.
Agreed. Mr. Niggli, thanks for your time today. Moving forward, just to sum this up, what's up next for the World Anti-Doping Agency? The Think Tank series continues, and a lot of great things are happening in the near future. In your eyes, what does the timeline look like now, and what's next on the docket for WADA?
Well, the big next meeting for us is middle of November. It's our foundation board meeting, which will take place in Glasgow in Scotland. That's where we're going to try to draw the roadmap going forward, and we'll have everything around the table. From that meeting, we'll know, you know, where a number of ideas and projects are going to go and develop, and what the timeline is going to be. So I would say, you know, November now is the key meetings, and after November, we'll see what are the next big priorities as being set by our foundation board.
Well, Mr. Niggli, thank you for your time today. Very insightful. We'll look forward to following WADA and the war on drugs in sports with the greatest of interest and support as well. All the best to you and everybody at WADA.
Thanks, Jeff. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
There you go. A fantastic discussion looking into the world of drugs in sports. WADA is gaining power, which is great news for everybody out there who is in favor of clean and fair sports. We got to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, injury prevention, improved performance, it's an athlete's dream. Heck, it's a team's dream. And it's coming from a very unlikely source. Find out where right after this on Crush Performance.
Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the fabulous Sports Babe, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at CrushPerformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. Yes, please do go to our website, CrushPerformance.com. Follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, go to the Talent Grid. We'll let you in. It's our group. We're just spreading the good word. The question of the day, get to us, or at least contemplate it. Let us know what you think, or just think about it. Are we doing enough in the fight on drugs and sport? Coming off a great conversation with the Director General of WADA, Olivier Niggli. It looks like WADA will be empowered moving forward, which is very exciting. We're going to shift gears here right now and look at a little bit of injury prevention, performance enhancement from an area that typically isn't thought to be that, the area of yoga, mobility, and breathing. We're joined now by Dana Santez, mobility and body coach. She is the exclusive yoga and fitness expert for CNN, works with a number of professional teams. You can check out her website, mobilitymaker.com. Dana, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, listen, I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. You know, we think of yoga in a certain light. And in professional sports, sometimes it's not received so well. But there's certainly a place for it, a growing place for it. The acceptance is there for sure. But I like your take on this, you know, sort of being known as the mobility maker. It's a little bit more than yoga, isn't it? And where you're taking it now into professional sports is a real groundbreaking movement, I think.
Well, yes. You know, it's funny. Everybody thinks you're an overnight success when the reality is it's been almost 13 years that I've been doing this in professional sports. Of course, it's evolved. So it's really evolved, and like I rebranded from Radius Yoga to Mobility Maker over the past year, because, you know, the more that you learn, the more you realize that you didn't know what you didn't know. So, it's evolved into a lot more focus on mobility as opposed to stretching, and functional movement as opposed to, and functional range of motion as opposed to flexibility, and then breathing biomechanics. So, yeah.
I like it. And all those things resonate very, very loudly and true in the world of sport performance. You're the exclusive fitness expert for CNN. You're also the mobility and breathing coach. And you work with teams like the Atlanta Braves, the Toronto Blue Jays, the Phillies, the Rays, the Lightning. You've worked with individual athletes, Olympic athletes. I like this, too. You've worked with veterans. You work with the Boston Fire Department and NFL players. There's a wide range. This just goes well beyond sport, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, one of the biggest honors I would say of my lifetime was being the yoga coach to the Boston Fire Department. That was amazing, because those are the real heroes. I mean, you know, we have sports heroes, but those are the real heroes.
Yeah.
So definitely. And the same thing with veterans, just to have the opportunity and have them trust me. It's been really cool.
You know, we talk about the veterans, Dana. You know, my parents are aging as well, and I wish that there was a program, or they would have been into a program or been educated on some of the things that we're doing now in terms of, you know, mobility and staying youthful, because that's one of the great impacts of these types of programs. You know, and mobility as we get into our older years, our twilight years, is so incredibly important because it can disappear so quickly.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing is that people start to become afraid of movement, and people who get injured, you know, not just aging, but as we get injured, there's this, oh, well, you know, you should stop all movement. You should just rest. And increasingly we're finding out that that's doing more harm than good. And I actually wrote an article for CNN about, back pain based on a study that was released that showed that people with chronic back pain who were given passive treatments were much more likely, like, I forget what the percentage was, but it was extraordinary, very significant. They were much more likely to have a reoccurrence of their back injury within a year, as opposed to people who had movement as part of their protocol immediately after an injury. You know, you figure out what you have going on, so you make sure that you're not doing anything contraindicated, but that you're not just lying down, that there's movement. And it's good that people are finally figuring that out.
Yeah, no, that's an important thing. We're talking with Dana Santez, mind-body coach in professional sports. You can check out her website, mobilitymaker.com. Great information there. You can see all her articles and posts and some great information. You know, Dana, it wasn't too long ago in professional sports, and I was there when we sort of started integrating yoga as one of our tools for our athletes, especially the athletes that sort of enjoyed that time and the atmosphere around it. But there's a right way and a wrong way to go about, let's just go back to the yoga side of it. There's a right way and wrong way to go about that. We've seen some yoga programs do as much damage as good. So in the world of sport, you have to proceed with caution. You really need to know what you're doing to make sure it works for you. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes. I couldn't agree with that more. And you know, I'm guilty of coming in initially because I was one of the first people to bring yoga to professional sports. I own all the URLs. You know, I have my main URL, Mobility Maker, but if you put in yogaforbaseball.com, yogaforfootball.com, yogaforsports.com, every major sport, yogafor.com leads to my website, because I might as well have been bringing underwater basket weaving to sports. Like, it wasn't something, you know, they were doing.
Right.
And there's a logic that seems so clear immediately. You know, you look at these amazing athletes and how they move their bodies, and you look at yoga and you say, oh, that could only help them, right? That could only be a benefit if you don't know better. And remember, I said in the beginning that my work has evolved because I didn't know what I didn't know. So I came in with, you know, an education that was very much based in yoga and teaching people how to do yoga, not applying yoga to sport in an efficient and effective manner. That came later, not too much later because I learned quickly, but that came later. And I think a lot of people are coming in, you know, and they think, oh, I want to work with professional athletes and I want to teach them how to be yogis. Well, you know, once you get into professional sports, especially to the degree that I have, I start to really understand the schedule and the demands that are on these athletes. And you don't want to take them away from family time. You don't want to take them away from time working on their sports. And you also don't want to do anything that could be detrimental to anything else they're doing. So there's a huge learning curve there. And I don't think everybody is either committed enough or necessarily, that they necessarily catch on to that.
Yeah.
But I think that's why I've kind of lasted in professional sports for as long as I have. And, you know, and my business has grown so much is because I work with the strength coaches and the athletic trainers and, you know, even, you know, the pitching coaches, the hitting coaches, just to get a better understanding of what demands are on the players, what are you trying to accomplish, and how can I best fit? And now, you know, increasingly teams have mental performance coaches. And so, and I do, you know, meditation, and then there's so much that you can do with the breathing, to leverage the autonomic nervous system. And I'm such a nerd. I am constantly learning. So I've learned so much about all of this, and then I start to integrate as part of, you know, like these high performance teams within the team. And so that's kind of how I work.
Yeah, no, Dana, I really like it. We're talking with Dana Santez, mind-body coach, works with a lot of professional sports, the Blue Jays, the Phillies, Rays, Lightning, and the NFL, real high-end stuff, and rightfully so. I like what you said there, Dana. You know, we've got to be really careful about just adding things on and adding things on. When you look at the overall schedule, look, in our programs, our number one priority is managing and building around rest and recovery, quality rest and recovery. So I like your thoughts, and it's really important for the athletes to understand as well. You know, taking that extra hour away from family time, that's a big deal in the world of pro sports. So I really like that and appreciate that approach, Dana.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's also how am I applying it based on the time frame that they're bringing me in? Because it's one thing to, you know, in the NFL to put in an hour session with guys the day after a game, and also they're not playing games every single day, right? And so it can be focused on recovery, and we could take a whole hour usually in that kind of setting. But when you're in baseball or hockey or you know, the NBA, and there are multiple games and there's tons of travel, it's like, okay, where are they fitting me into the schedule? What's happening before? What's happening after? You know, where's this guy's head at? What if it's an individual guy or a group? And just understanding where they are in their schedule, where they are in their mindset, how they're playing, and what can I best give to them? As opposed to some cookie cutter program. And I get emails. I get so many emails from people who are like, can you give me a program for hockey?
Right.
Okay. Is it in season? Is it off season? You know, what day of the week? Are they going to be on ice right after? Are they coming off the ice? Like, there's so many different components that affect how I'm going to teach a program. I never walk into a complex, into a stadium and, you know, have some program in mind that I'm definitely going to do. I have to assess the situation, because even if the strength coach and I have kind of mapped out, you know, the structure of it, I could come in, it could be like, there's a change in the schedule. Instead of half an hour, you've got 15 minutes. You know, what can you give them in 15 minutes? And so you have to just be ready to change it on the fly. You can't be married to, this is what I'm going to do.
Right. Well, we know the best laid plans of mice and men, right? It can change in a heartbeat. And you're right. You have to react to the environment. That's absolutely right. We're talking with Dana Santez. You can check out her great information at her website, mobilitymaker.com. Dana, we've got a few minutes left here, and I just wanted to get to this because I want to get to a couple of things. And this is one thing that's really important, and I think we're really starting to grasp the importance of this. You know, in psychology, we talk about mindfulness, right? And, you know, there's a lot of meditation and spiritualness that goes along with this sort of thing. But there's also just, you know, pure, hardcore, you know, mental approaches like mindfulness. But when we talk about breathing and the impact of breathing, there's way more to this than anybody first anticipated. Now the research is getting deep. And you get into something that I believe is really interesting. You get into something called breathing biomechanics. And, you know, off the top for, you know, your average recreational athlete, you wouldn't think this is a big deal, but it truly is. And it can be applied to everybody on the planet.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So breathing is our most fundamental movement pattern. And that usually, like, it takes a while for people to wrap their head around that. Wait, breathing is a movement pattern, but think about it. Think about how much muscular effort gets put into breathing and how often it's happening. There is not another movement pattern in your body that you're doing constantly, up to 24,000 times a day people are breathing. Now, that's not optimal, but unfortunately, most people aren't breathing optimally. It's more optimal to be at 18 to 20,000 times a day, but still there is not another controllable movement pattern. Your heart's beating, but you can't really control that. The only way you can actually start to control your heart rate is through your breathing. It's the only aspect of the autonomic nervous system that we can take control of. But the way that you breathe, how functional it is, and how functionally you use your diaphragm, and it's a misnomer that diaphragmatic breathing is only deep breathing. That's like saying you only use your bicep to flex your elbow when it's a deep flexion. You use your bicep, even if it's a shallow flexion, right? You're still using your bicep to flex your elbow.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Same thing with your diaphragm. And so many people don't recognize that. But what ends up happening is if you, whether it's by sickness or just your body being out of position, but you start to use your diaphragm less and you recruit accessory breathing muscles in your neck, your shoulders, your chest, even your back to help elevate your rib cage. Think about it now. Those muscles are firing dysfunctionally up to 24,000 times a day to help you take a breath. No wonder so many people have jacked up upper traps, can't turn their neck. You know, it's a lot to do with the quality of your respiration. And what's really cool is that our body wants to breathe correctly. So once you know some techniques to help people start to breathe correctly, I can take somebody and do two rounds of five breaths in a bridged position that aligns, that gets their rib cage in a better position and aligns their rib cage and their pelvis properly. Two rounds of five breaths. It doesn't take very long. So maybe with the explaining and whatnot, it might be 3 minutes. But before I do that, I'll test their internal shoulder rotation. And then after those two rounds of five breaths, I'll retest their internal shoulder rotation. And boom, there's a significant increase. And you know why? Because I shut off the accessory breathing muscles that they were using dysfunctionally and gave them back to their shoulder for their real job. And then got their diaphragm to work. So their rib cage was put in a better position. And think about it, like your scaps have no choice but to ride on the position of your rib cage.
100%, you're breathing, yeah.
Right? If your breathing is jacked up, your scaps will be in the wrong position. It's going to impact your shoulder girdle. It's going to impact everything, spine position, hips. The other thing I can do is I can do a rib cage repositioning move that looks kind of like a yoga stretch, but the emphasis is on breathing and rib cage position. And it takes less than 90 seconds, and that drastically changes internal hip rotation. And that one, like one of the catchers on the on an MLB team that I work with called it a drop the mic movement. He was like, that is incredible, because internal rotation is so hard to get. And here I'm giving it to them through breathing. There's no stretching. There's no, especially the internal rotation for the shoulder, there's no sleeper holds. There's no, you know, sleeper stretches. It's just giving them back a functional diaphragm to and functional rib cage position. It's incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible, and it's functional, right? Yeah. And it's real in the world. So not only are we getting the benefits of range of motion and muscle balance and alignment, we're seeing, you know, reduction in injuries and increased performance because of this as well. And you know, in the world of sport performance, that's truly what it's all about. This is very exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah. Think about it. If you're a hockey player and you're getting slammed up against the boards, wouldn't you want your rib cage and your shoulder girdle to be in a structurally sound position? Because then you're less apt to get injured, you know, or a huge traumatic injury. So it helps you absorb better shock. But then also, as we were talking about, like in terms of mindfulness and that your autonomic nervous system, if your breathing is jacked up and it's shallow and rapid, you can get locked in your sympathetic nervous system. And that's the aspect of your nervous system that's considered fight or flight. And it's constantly pumping you with cortisol. And you know, when you're a professional athlete, a lot of times you want to be in that, you know, when you're playing, because you're amped up, you're reactionary, you know, it quickens your reflexes. It doesn't necessarily make you think as solid as you could. And so sometimes I want to get pitchers out of that so that they can be a little clearer. But in other positions, you know, guys are good being in their sympathetic nervous system. However, when they go home to hang out with their families, they can't be in that. When they want to, you know, sleep at night after they've been traveling, they can't be locked in their sympathetic nervous system. And if they can't get out of it and they don't know how to breathe with their diaphragm, they're going to be stuck in the cycle and they're not going to sleep well. They're going to be irritable. Their quality of life is going to go down. So it's breathing. I tell guys all the time, it's a superpower. It impacts everything.
Absolutely. And all day long as well. Well, Dana, this has been fantastic. Hey, one last question for you as we come to the end of our time here, but athletes, which type of athletes have or are the most fun to work with? You know, I've been around these guys in every sport and they're a ton of fun, but when they get thrown into an environment like this, you can have a lot of fun with the guys. So hey, just in your experiences, you know, you work with the NFL guys, the hockey guys, the baseball guys. Is there a group that tends to be, you know, a little more fun and apt to joke around and have a good time getting into this than others?
I've never been asked this, and I've been asked a lot of the same questions over and over. This one has never come up. Spring training is fun, and you know this.
Yeah.
Spring training in Major League Baseball is really fun, and sometimes they're pulling pranks on each other, and I've had some really fun experiences with the MLB guys, but I don't want to hurt anybody else's feelings. I love them all.
Yeah, I get it for sure. On your website, mobilitymaker.com, there's a picture of you with two gigantic bucks, I believe they're O-line guys. And I thought that's a fantastic picture. You're standing between these two giant beasts, and there you are teaching them how to breathe. Just great stuff, Dana. Well, listen, we really appreciate your insights here today. We'll look forward to staying in touch with you as research advances and we get into this a little bit more to help everybody who's listening to the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me come on. And they were great questions. And I hope if anybody listening, you know, is curious about this, look into it. A lot of what I learned came from the Postural Restoration Institute. And you can find their website and have tons of articles up there. And really a game changer for me. So.
Well, there you go. Fantastic conversation with Dana Santez. You can get more information on her and her work at mobilitymaker.com. Have to thank Dana for coming on the show, as well as Olivier Nigley, the Director General for WADA, and Connor. And I want to thank you guys for listening. Next week, we're going to look behind the scenes at performance cultures. Are there secrets that allow some cultures to outperform the competition and develop talent like nowhere else? We'll find out next week on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then.